So, hello everyone. I'm Zach.
I'm also Zach.
And this is the Zach Squared Podcast, Episode 1, where we talk about comic books, pop culture, and whatever else we feel like. So, we were just at lunch, and you had something that you wanted to talk about, but I stopped you because I thought it'd be a good conversation to start off with.
Yeah, so right now I'm reading a book called All the Birds in the Sky, and let me pull up the author here, but, sorry, not All the Birds in the Sky, but All the Birds, Ka-kow! And it's by Charlie Jane Anders. She is a writer on the website IO9, and I'm about a third of the way through it, but it's about like a friendship-y love story between two kids, later adults, and the basic premise is that the girl in the story is a witch, and the boy kind of lords over technology. And just, I was reading it before I sat down with Zach to lunch, and just the funniest thing happened. You know, the two of them are at the mall, and this really isn't any spoilers, but there's an assassin also at the mall who had this vivid hallucination dream about these two eventually starting a war between magic and technology, and it was his job to kill them, or his self-proclaimed.
So this is like a time travel fantasy sci-fi mashup book.
There's not really that much time travel. The boy, his name
just
escapes me right
just
now.
The samurai
Lawrence. His name is Lawrence. He built a 2-second time machine, which is like this little watch. He found the directions on the internet, and he presses it, and he can jump 2 seconds into the future, and that's it.
No backwards, just forward.
Just forwards. But
seems so useless.
With this assassin, it gets you out of awkward situations. But with this assassin,
about it,
he is at a mall because that's where Lawrence and our other character is, and he is freaked out because he hasn't been around this many people in such a long time. And what ended up happening, he's like freaked out of his mind because he attended like the National Assassins Convention the week before, and he goes to the Cheesecake Factory of all places and gets ice cream, and then he has like this existential crisis, like the cake can be poisoned, it can all these things can happen,
this
it can be a trick by the witch, and he ends up eating the ice cream feeling pretty satisfied, and then he starts to get sick. He starts foaming at the mouth.
Oh,
and
this is all in the first third of the book.
This is the first.
This
third
sounds
of the
like
book.
This. Just
this
sounds
isn't
ridiculous.
Even like the first 100 pages of the book. Even.
What the hell?
And he gets banned from the Cheesecake Factory, trying to get an antidote to the poison, which is located in one of his various pouches on his person. So he's digging through the zipper of his pants as I'm gesturing right now, and to get the antidote. And like I said, he gets banned from the Cheesecake Factory because apparently you're not allowed to foam at the mouth, nor
or
stick
die
your hand
poison.
In pants.
So fuck you.
Yeah. So I just thought it was really interesting. I pointed it out to Zach while we were at Barnes & Noble before this, and it's just such a fun read. I'm really enjoying
this
it.
This sounds like a chaotic and beautiful mess, but it also intrigues me.
It's not even a mess. It's just very well
It just
done.
Sounds like the most ridiculous plot ever, but surprisingly entertaining.
Yeah, it really is. When the book first came out, or when I first got it, it was just put under the typical science fiction fantasy sections at Barnes & Noble, but I was at another bookstore here in Colorado and noticed that it was put on the magical realism section, so it's actually kind of being now viewed as an important part of literary genre. So
wait, is the you said it was the writer of IO9? So are they what Latino? Or are they kind of that? Because I know that's like where magical realism. That's kind of where that all started. Was
I don't know
Latin and Central America.
IO9 is just like a science fiction-y and geeky website.
Yeah, I know it's all like pop culture
stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I've had interesting opinions on them. Like, sometimes they have really interesting articles, and other times they just decide to bash whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah, I don't typically go there for the
price. they always seem like they're like a week behind everything. It's like, for something we'll talk about here in a second, but like, oh, so like, I'm sure they'll have like some sort of like Civil War, new Marvel movie, like some sort of article about it, like next week after everybody's done talking about it.
They actually got high res pictures of the trailer from.
Oh, maybe they're finally like catching up.
But yeah, you know.
So yeah, let's move into that. So the second Civil War trailer dropped earlier this week, and had the first images of Spidey. Not a whole lot else was kind of revealed in it. What were your kind of thoughts on that? Thoughts on the costume or like anything new? I didn't really see anything. I know you like to watch trailers in slow-mo, like frame by frame.
Yeah, I have this really weird habit of downloading trailers in the highest resolution possible, and then I watch them in half speed just to take in stuff. I did that with the very first Batman vs. Superman trailer, and that was the only trailer that I watched. I have not seen another trailer of that movie since, even though people kind of spoiled it. It's like, insert character here, Doomsday is going to be in the movie. And I'm like, well, I didn't know that, and I didn't need to know that. And so with the Marvel movies, I really don't care how much I see. And, you know, the common argument is that every Marvel movie is very cookie cutter.
It really is. I feel like the Captain America ones are like the only ones who've kind of, I don't know, they've kind of tried to stay away from that formula. They don't really, they have their own formula, really.
Yeah, and the way that I see all the Marvel movies is like, it's that really quippy kind of funny style after serious action, quip, serious action.
I feel like that's not going to be the case with this, though. Like, it seems like the way they're plotting it just seems like a really dark and depressing movie.
Yeah, and I don't know, because you're right, Captain America is the only type of those movies that doesn't have a strict formula to it, but watching Ant-Man, comedy, action. But it was a heist movie.
It's true. They do have their own like kind of like setup. Yeah. Like Captain America is kind of like the spy war, mm-hmm. dealing with those sorts of issue movies.
Yeah, and then Civil War kind of retains that. You know, the basic plot is that the Sokovia
Accord is what they're calling it.
Is essentially their Superhuman Registration Act. It's a way for these mass vigilantes or anyone with powers to kind of limit their power, but
same basic plot point of the original Civil War.
But, you know, you asked me how I feel about it and how I feel about the trailer. You know, there's a very stark difference between that very first trailer that they dropped to this current trailer. Like, they took off.
This actually seems like Cap. They kind of like framed Cap as the bad guy in this one.
Yeah, and they actually like removed an entire color filter. Like, a lot of people have been posting side by sides of the first trailer versus this trailer, and the specific scene at the airport. Like, in the first trailer...
That just looks like the most anticlimactic thing. It's, like, supposed to be this giant clash, and it's, like... It's, like, 5-on-5, like...
Yeah, the comic had, like, 20... The cover, or maybe one of the splash pages, had, like, 20 people on each side. But then you have, like, 10 people running out in airport. Yeah. But in that first one...
I think my favorite comment of that is, like... This looks like just two, groups of people just, like, getting in a fight in a Costco parking lot or something. Yes.
But, like I said, in the first trailer, they showed Falcon flying and Scarlet Witch flying, but then in this latest trailer, Ant-Man got CGI out of
him. Oh, yeah, that's true.
And then Falcon and Scarlet Witch are still running. And
the Ant-Man arrow, that was a cool shot.
Yeah, that was really cool. But going back to Spider-Man, you know, I love Spider-Man. The Spider-Man books, other than, like, the Star Wars books, are the only ones that I currently read from Marvel. But looking... Just kind of, we don't know anything.
The costume looks fine.
Yeah, it's the classic Alex Ross-styled costume with a few little flares to it. Like,
and then the animated eyes, like in Deadpool.
It's not animated, though.
It's not?
When you were talking about IO9s, like, earlier week behind, they were actually the first people to get, like, those high-res shots.
Oh, really?
When you zoom into the eyes, it's kind of shuttered. It's staggered so that the eyes will... I don't know if they're gonna have like an in-universe reason to it, but it shows that the eyes, when they're wide open, there's like tiny little folds going back, and then when they narrow down, you could see like the individual lines of the eyes. kind of like a shutter camera, almost.
So it could be practical effects.
Yeah. I'm sure there is CGI added to it. Like, it worked very well with Deadpool in that same regard, but Spider-Man
just Deadpool had an actual costume, too, so... Yeah.
Spider-Man just seems really out of place.
He does. It just seems kind of forced.
Well, not even forced, but, like, his costume is so bright and almost very...
Yeah, that's right. We talked about this earlier, and I was like, it just seems like, oh, here's all these dark colors, and then it's like, oh, bright red. Like, not even Iron Man red, but, like, just a pure, like, bright, almost pinkish red.
Yeah, so some people are thinking, since we obviously see Spider-Man on Tony's side first there, that he's going to be working with them up until
a certain point. Like, kind of similar to the comic book storyline where Peter jumps sides. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But it's not really a spoiler. It's, like, what, 10 years old at this point?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't... It seems as though they're going to have a very... logical reasoning as to what's going to be happening in Civil War that is still very in character for everyone. You know, Tony, in all the Iron Man movies, he's like, yes, I'm going to do the thing. Yes, I'm going to do the thing. Iron Man 3, it's like, I'm going to do something to make better of myself. And then, you know, the Avengers movies kind of ignore all of that characterization from the solo movies.
He goes back to, oh, I'm still Iron Man.
Yeah, and it's, you know... They didn't even, like, the Avenger movies never even gave us an in-universe reason as to why he had his armor again.
Or yeah, they didn't even, like, try to explain Extremis or any of that kind of plot point. I will say probably one of my favorite shots is the scene where Bucky, I can't tell if he's, like, doing it on his own accord. I guess we'll find out, but it looks like he's trying to hunt down Tony. Mm-hmm. And, like, Tony pulls out, like, the Iron Man glove and blocks the shot. And just his face, that's probably one of my favorite scenes where he's just, like...
Did he actually just
shoot me? He, like, almost tried to fucking murder me right now? Like...
Yeah,
I'm really interested... I wonder if that's probably early in the movie to, like, lead to the crossbones interaction. Just because it's... Like, especially, like, just kind of the way Bucky was moving, just the look on his face. It looked like he still... Like, back in Winter Soldier, like, that first of, I have a mission, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And nothing else matters.
We really don't know. We know there's, like, almost 30 to 40 fully named characters from the comics.
That's my biggest worry is, like, I want this to be the Cap and Bucky story, but I'm worried it's going to get, like, washed away by all the Civil War plot.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. did refer to Civil War as if it were his Iron Man 4.
Which concerns me.
Some of the stuff in this that we have not seen, we do know Crossbones is in the movie and that he will be fighting Cap at some point. Whether it's in the final act of the film or in the beginning. See, I really think the middle part would be that airport scene.
That's what I'm thinking too.
The movie's almost like 2.5 hours long, I think. Like 2 hours, 17 minutes or something along those lines. But the one character we have not seen hide nor hair of is Baron Zemo.
That's
who
true.
Is a very prominent Marvel villain.
He's been, like, the main Captain America villain for these movies, too.
Well, he's never been in a Captain America movie. This is his first
Am I thinking it was a different character?
Red Skull was in
the first movie. I'm thinking Red Skull.
Yeah. But Baron Zemo, you know...
And he was in the end of... Was he in the end of Winter Soldier?
No, he wasn't either.
Where was that... What was the end credits scene that had Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver? Was that Iron Man? I could have sworn that was Winter Soldier.
Yes, that was. But that was... I can't even remember that character's name because he gets killed off at the beginning of Avengers anyways.
True.
And that's one of my biggest gripes about Marvel is that each movie that they do is a one-off villain. But going back to Baron Zemo, they talk... You know, we know he's cast. We know he's not going to be the super Nazi Marvel villain that he was when he was first introduced. But everyone kind of sees Baron Zemo right now as the invisible hand that's pushing these two forces together.
Well, I mean, it's already been revealed that Hydra's been, like, in the background, like, working against Steve and Falcon this whole time. So.
Yeah, all of the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff.
Yeah,
and Winter Soldier.
It's clear that Hydra's playing a big part in this somehow. So I'm wondering if, like, maybe at the end it's going to be like, oh, it was Hydra all along who brought you two against each other.
Yeah. And, yeah, like I said, there's just so many characters in there, you know, they take liberties with all of the
they do Marvel like it, characters. It's hard, it's always hard to like separate. It's like, oh, we're doing Captain America Civil War. Well, my first thought is, oh, I'm gonna take like look for all the elements of the Civil War storyline.
Yeah,
like it's kind of you always have to kind of like try to separate those two, because they are different interpretations of the same storyline.
And that's the same argument right now with that third Wolverine movie that's coming out.
Yeah, well,
it's supposed to be Hugh Jackman's last
supposed to
movie.
Be Old Man Logan, exactly. But will it follow that storyline, or is it just going to be old Hugh Jackman?
It's
going
to be old Hugh Jackman and whatever X-Men characters we were allowed to use.
I think it would be really cool to see like the actual Old Man Logan storyline play out, but yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
There's no Hulks, so
which
there
is,
goes,
you know,
like,
there's the
main,
biggest
one of the main conflicts at the beginning. There goes Hawkeye, who sends Logan to do his Mighty Man adventure thing in the Spider-Mobile. They can't even use Kingpin or Peter's daughter. I think it was Peter's daughter, the Spider-Girl or Spider-Bitch that people end up referring to it as. And then, you know, there's going to be no climatic final battle with President of the United States Red Skull, so it's like, it's going to be an Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
With
probably like they're probably gonna try and make call outs to it, but we like with all the stupid like all the legal stuff's gonna probably mess it up, and it's not gonna be Old Man, quote unquote, Old Man Logan.
Yeah, a lot, you know, just talking about a lot of these movies, DC did it right, you know, Warner Brothers,
they took their time. Like, even if Green Lantern was a flop, we can all admit that. But at least they're not like, oh, here's all our properties scattered to the wind.
Yeah, they didn't... but, you know, Marvel did that on purpose. You know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, they had some selling issues and whatnot. Uh-huh. But, you know, all these movies are great. But it's like, there are people out there just hoping that the next X-Men movie just bombs, so the X-Men can be added to the Avengers universe, or that MCU.
It's so weird that the fact... at the same time, it's like, yeah, they'd be great to see, but at the same time, Marvel's been pushing away from them for so long recently. Like, it almost seems like they're just trying to, like, get rid of them all together, but I don't think they're ever gonna, like, wipe the slate clean, but the number of mutants has certainly diminished a lot.
There's the argument and, like, the kind of theory that always gets thrown around on Reddit is that they are not legally allowed to make new mutants because the properties automatically go to
Fox
for these
characters.
So
that's why they've been trying to push in humans, but now it seems like they're not trying to push in humans because...
They're still, like...
The Inhumans movie is still apparently up in the air if they're going to even do that.
But the Inhumans are a large part of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's about the only thing, though.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the comic books. Well, but even then, they kind of... at least I don't read enough of them. Like, the only book I read with an Inhuman... Or, I guess two books is A-Force with Medusa and then Miss Marvel. Mm-hmm. Or I guess Captain Marvel's technically an Inhuman. So three books.
Yeah, and, you know...
But even then, they don't really... Like, Miss Marvel's the only one who really dwelled in that Inhuman storyline in the first... Was it the first? I guess it was the third volume of it, of the 2014 series?
Mm-hmm.
I guess 15 series since they
rebooted.
I mean,
Lockjaw, you know.
Yeah, Lockjaw.
Specifically sent by Lady Medusa.
Lockjaw, and then the whole thing with her brother, which they haven't touched on at all in the recent issues. I think they're just kind of like, yeah, it was a plot point. Like, he's controlled it now.
Right.
It's fine.
And for anyone listening, we are talking about the Miss Marvel comic series by G. Willow Wilson. Amazing series.
Not the old school Miss Marvel. Not Carol Danvers' Miss Marvel.
Yeah, Kamala Khan. Who, you know, she's been making a lot of breakout lately, too. She's in that She's in that new Avengers mobile game.
Oh, yeah. Avengers Academy.
Yeah. Where all the Avengers are DH'd to be, like, high school-y, college-y kids. All training to learn how to use their powers. But it's like, oh man, Kamala Khan is at school with Captain America and Tony Stark. That's a little weird.
Yeah. I don't know. And then kind of to stay on a Civil War topic, with the whole Civil War 2, like, Marvel's been putting out, like, promo images of it with, like, characters taking sides. And I don't know if I want to read this storyline. Like, we were talking about this a little bit earlier this morning. But it just... a lot of it just seems so out of character. Like, I get the whole point is like, oh, we're dividing, people are going to be divided, but I just don't feel like Kamala would go against Carol Danvers. Like, Carol Danvers is her hero.
Well, remember, a lot of promotion material doesn't necessarily need to be what happens in the story. Like, they've been teasing... all the Marvel books are going to be affected by this, and they've shown that the X-Men are even going to be involved with Jean Grey standing in front of a fiery background, so people are like, oh, the Phoenix is going to come back for teenage Jean Grey. And it's like, well, we don't exactly know. I mean, look at all the Civil War, or not Civil War, all the Secret Wars promotional stuff.
It's true.
They made it out to be, like, this really big deal.
And then it's just like, bleh.
Yeah.
It's kind of vomited itself out.
And, you know, I put my faith in Brian Michael Bendis, who's going to be writing
That's the only thing that I'm like, maybe I'll read it, but at the same time, I don't know if I want to.
I probably won't. You know, I don't really pull that many Marvel books that often. But, you know, I try to stay up to date with the big events. You know, I hopped on Secret Wars. That was, like, really my first big Marvel storyline that
I did too. I was honestly, since you were there when I went and reread all of Hickman's Avengers run from Volume 1 leading up to Secret Wars, and it was just probably the biggest disappointment ever. Because the lead up with Avengers is so good and, like, really well paced. And then Secret Wars is just this giant mess that has nothing to do with that.
And, you know,
there's, like, maybe one thing with the whole Doom being God.
Playing devil's advocate, a lot of Secret Wars, a lot of Avengers, let me start with, is very action based. Here is the crisis, we need to go ahead and solve it. Whereas in Secret Wars, Hickman has already resolved the crisis, except for the people coming off the raft.
Right.
And a lot of... See, my biggest gripe with Secret Wars was that it was very exposition-based, rather than this kind of epic throwdown that everyone wanted. And we got the epic throwdown in, like, the final...
Two or three issues.
And I gotta say that the... you know, fight/argument between Doctor Doom and Mr. Fantastic was, like, the key thing.
That was probably the most important moment of the whole thing, but everything else leading up to that just kind of got thrown away. It's like, conflict, but in the end it really doesn't matter.
And it didn't matter because none of the Avengers who were dealing with the problem, Cap, Tony, or any of them, were... the major players.
That's
for
true.
That
battle. They were just there.
They were there.
I guess the only real one was Black Panther, but...
and Reed. They were the only two from the
but
Illuminati.
But even then, Black Panther's not wasn't an Avenger, he was part of the Illuminati.
Yeah, and...
I guess it was more the new Avengers, since they were technically part of the Illuminati.
Yeah, and, you know, looking at these things, their team to combat Doctor Doom was... Reed Richards, who knew of the problem. Black Panther, who knew of the problem. Namor/the...
King of Atlantis.
Yeah, and then a bunch of...
Hyperion.
A bunch of characters who were not involved in that crisis with Hickman's Avengers.
They knew about, like, something was happening, but they didn't know what exactly.
Yeah, they had Peter, they had Miles, both Spider-Men, Lady Thor... Peter Quill, who...
Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. And all these characters, they weren't thrown in there for, you know, the in-universe explanation was we needed to save the most intellectual minds that we could so we can restart the new world after this incursion. Whereas Doom wanted to just stop the incursions. And the whole concept behind Secret Wars was that they wanted to fold... all of the universes down into one. Basically, what they did, though, was they eliminated the Ultimate Universe and nothing else.
Pretty much.
And I guess some of the other worlds from Web Warriors, all these people that don't have any homes anymore, like Spider UK, Spider-Man Noir, but...
I guess really the only, like...
There was no payoff.
There's, like, okay, they got rid of the Ultimate Universe, and then they merged what, like... All they did was merge Miles into 616 and Old Man Logan. That's pretty much it.
And, yeah, there was no ultimate payoff other than, you know, that clash of ideals between Reed and Dr. Doom. And then them talking about, you know, Reed trying to... Dr. Doom trying to get Reed to realize his ego. It's like, you would have thought you would have done a better job. And then Reed's like, yes, I finally accept that. And then Molecule Man is like, well... You both agreed to it. Let's change the world. And then in the
end... Go throw me out into the universe.
And then Reed is sitting there. He's essentially the new god of the multiverse. And, you know, Franklin Richards, who, since he was initially created, is the most overpowered Marvel character ever. And that's why we mostly see him remain as this kid. And, you know, Franklin literally has the ability to create an entire universe. There is one story arc where he kept a universe inside of a plastic ball he played with. But, you know, Franklin would be the one who would recreate all the universes, while Reed, with the Doom God powers, would throw the worlds back into their proper place. But it's like, the payoff was the clash of ideals, Miles and Old Man Logan get shoot over, and then the Fantastic Four is saying, all right, we're going to take a break. Which is like, I don't know. I've never read Fantastic Four, so I don't know
how I feel about that. I can't speak on that
but,
either.
But, you know, the head of Marvel, Axel Alonso, I think his name was,
chief
basically said, you know, this is the last Fantastic Four story for now, until someone else creates a better story for them. But it's like, you've had writers in the past who wrote these amazing arcs, like Hickman and Remender, but you're just saying, it's like, alright, we're not going to write these... We're specifically not going to write Reed Richards anymore because he's not interesting. We're going to keep Firestorm. Johnny Storm, because...
And the Thing.
But Johnny Storm is now part of the Inhumans, and then the Thing is in the Guardians of the Galaxy for... no other reason. Like, they also have Kitty Pryde in Guardians of the Galaxy now, but they've provided an explanation saying, yeah, she's part of the Guardians now to stay with Peter, and she is also trying to escape the Terrigen Mists on Earth that are killing all the mutants. Great. Perfect explanation. Why is Ben Grimm there?
Exactly. So, let's try and shift gears here on move away from it. I guess technically Secret Wars ended back in January, so it's not too old to still discuss it and kind of talk about the fallout of it.
Supposed to end 5 months.
Yeah,
five
Jesus
months,
Christ.
3 months earlier.
That was the most delayed thing ever. At least DC's Convergent one was like, yeah, it was just as disappointing, but it ended in a month. Okay,
but they had a payoff. They said they brought back the original multiverse, and they brought back the idea of local multiverses and Hyper Time, saying that all of your universes and all of your stories still exist within the DC world. I guess right now you can see I'm a bigger DC fan than Marvel.
Yeah, I think we can both probably agree that we're both pretty big DC fans. I read more Marvel than he does, and I've only been hardcore reading, collecting comics for about 5 years. So, I guess, just very briefly, we probably should have done this at the very beginning, but... let's just explain our backgrounds of like where we're coming from, like our comic knowledge, for the just for anybody listening, just so it doesn't, like, if we make mistakes, like I'm sure I'll missay something or like more, we'll get some details wrong. So I started back in about 2011-2012. What really got me back into it was reading or watching the animated movie Batman Under the Red Hood. I was like, oh, this is really cool. I like this character Jason Todd. It was a really interesting storyline. So I started reading Red Hood and the Outlaws, which, good God, that I have many issues with that book, but not the point of this discussion right now. So that's when really I started picking up, and then I picked up Batman. It was really, I think DCC is like really what got me. The first year of it really like kind of like, oh, this is super cool, I want to read more. So then that brought me down into the spiral of just collecting anything and anything I thought was cool. So other Zach, you've been reading for a lot longer than I have.
Yeah, so
you're really what got me into it.
I started reading just random comics I would see at Barnes & Noble back in high school. And never really got into collecting. And then about when the New 52 started, I decided, you know what, these comic things are pretty cool. And I started reading trades. Because, you know, Barnes & Noble was my only access to these comics, and then you had the interwebs and the internets and, you know, same word.
The Reddits. And
Reddits. But I started getting into hardcore collecting when I got into college. And, you know, New 52 started, so I started reading all those by trade, but it wasn't until...
We were roommates in college, so this is like...
until we started living together, and then we started, like, yeah, these trades, and then a comic shop opened across
two blocks away from us.
Yeah, it opened so close to our apartment that we just went there, and then my wallet just emptied, and I
and
started getting into hardcore collecting. But, you know, I've always read comics. I'm a really hardcore DC person. I love, the Gotham mythos, so the Batman, all of the Robins. Yes, there is more than one Robin. You know, that's my favorite joke to tell. But, yeah, that's kind of my background. And then the Marvel stuff that I read, I mainly focus on Spider-Man. And then a lot of the new Star Wars books that came out. Because prior to reading comics, I'd read all those Star Wars novels that aren't canon anymore. And, you know, I still read those. They're good fun. So.
But, yeah, so just kind of a big... a consensus. We pretty much read mostly new stuff. So, like, I got my start on New 52, and yeah, you just heard what Zach's kind of gets his from. So that's kind of like where our knowledge base is really for when we start to talk about things.
Yeah, I'm the type of person, I always joke around with people that I read Wikipedia before I go to sleep, or when I can't sleep, and those bad habits started, like, in middle school when I really got into, like, the DC Justice League cartoon, and I wanted to know who all these characters were, so I would do the whole wiki walk reading their entire character page, and I'm like, oh man, this is so cool, and then going to Barnes & Noble and trying to find a trade that would resemble some of that information or some of those stories. So I would say that most of my comic knowledge comes from, like, the early 2000s till now, so, like, maybe the past 16 years of reading Wikipedia and, you know, just reading in general. Just, I'm getting really into a lot of these things, all these comics and everything.
Yeah. Alright, so, do you want to take a break real quick? I want to get some water and stuff, and then we'll come back, talk about some Rebirth rumors, and, then our picks of the week, a little segment that we're going to do near the end here, so. And we're back!
We're back!
So, let's talk about some rumors for Rebirth coming up in June. That's only, 3 months away at the time of this recording or something?
Yes.
But I'm really excited for it. I really hope it's going to be something that resurges DC a little bit. Just because Convergence, like, they tried and they had some cool limited series, but it just kind of, like, it's still kind of, like, tapering off now. Like, a lot of the books that were rumored are... some of them aren't even coming out, and then a lot of them are ending, so I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens and have some new writers take the lead.
Yeah, and by rumors, we're going to be talking, and our goal is not to bash different websites where we get our news, but Bleeding Cool is the one that's been launching all these rumors, and then it gets launched onto Reddit afterwards, which is where I find my stuff.
Yeah.
I always joke around with Zach here, never take everything from Bleeding Cool 100%. Yeah.
Sometimes they've been accurate, but a lot of times, just like they're just kind of spouting out their ass. But the one I'm going to talk about is I think it came out about 2 weeks ago. It was on CBR Comic Book Resources, and probably they kind of like rumored I can't remember if they said that they were going to announce teams in sometime in March for all the Rebirth stuff. But some of the more interesting rumors of who's going to be taking on books, because we all know Scott Snyder is leaving Batman. For the longest time, it was rumored that he was going to go back to Detective, but now that doesn't seem to be...
Well,
we're not sure what he's going to do now.
He never said he was.
That was the big rumor, though. It was like, oh, he's going to go back to Detective now. But now we don't even know what he's going to be working on.
Right. And so far, they've actually announced one team. Suicide Squad, which has Jim Lee on art and Rob Williams as the writer.
Wow, the writer of Martian Manhunter. Wow, that's kind of a step up there.
Yeah, so it's...
I really liked Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, so. It's a very good, you know...
Sci-fi kind of... It started off as kind of like a space horror book, and now it's kind of like turned into a sci-fi... I guess sci-fi action book, really. Mm-hmm. The whole war with the Martians and stuff.
Yeah, so he's... The joke right now, though, is that at least with Suicide Squad, we do know that it has rotating artists, and it's a bi-weekly book, so it comes out every other week.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest news, was the fact that a lot of the main title books are getting is it for sure bi-weekly now?
Bi-weekly. And,
so 2 issues a month.
So, like, almost any character, any solo book, so, like...
It was like Batman. Wonder Woman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Flash, Green Lantern.
Yeah, a lot of those are all going to be bi-weekly, and then the larger encompassing books or the team books are going to be the normal monthly issues.
Right.
So and then yeah, I don't know which books are going to be bi-weekly off the top of my head, but that's for sure one team that has been confirmed.
Probably a couple of the rumors that intrigued me a lot was. One of them was Marguerite Bennett, so the current writer on DC's Bombshells. She also wrote with G-Will Wilson on A-Force back during Secret Wars, and now she's doing Angela.
Kieran Gillen with Marguerite Bennett on the first Angela, Queen of Hell series
right.
as well.
Yeah. Or the Angela Witch Hunter. Or yeah. Not Witch Hunter. Asgard's Assassin. Asgard's Assassin. That was the one. That was the one.
Marguerite Bennett is solo on Queen of Hell. That's
yeah.
What it is.
And I think she's been doing a phenomenal job on Bombshells. And the rumor was that she might be taking over the writing for Wonder Woman, since it's been confirmed that the Finches are no longer going to be on that series together. Not sure if that means David Finch is going to stay around or like one or the other. It seems like there's going to be a new writer for sure, though.
Yeah. So a lot of the other big Bleeding Cool rumor was that when they announced Rebirth, they did not actually have all of the teams at that time. Mm-hmm. That's like kind of the Bleeding Cool rumor, and then the Reddit joke. It's like, yeah, let's announce this big event, and okay, who's writing what? So
who do we have?
So Zach, this Zach's. You know, we probably should not have been both named Zach.
It's a problem here.
His favorite rumor is the Marguerite Bennett thing. My favorite rumor, though, is Tom King possibly taking on Batman.
That was my second one that I was really intrigued by. Because he's been killing it with Omega Man and Grayson.
Yeah, and so one of the things that a lot of people have talked about, and one of the things that Tom King has talked about, is that his goal in the end is for him and Tim Seeley, the other writer on Grayson, to turn Dick Grayson into an A-list hero. That...
Which we both are like, was he not already?
See, a lot of people, I love Dick Grayson. He's probably my favorite superhero. That's why I think he's automatically A-list. He's been the leader of the Teen Titans, the normal Titans, the Justice League at one point. And, you know,
he was Batman for a while.
Yeah, and so I see him already as an A-lister. But their goal is to make the name Dick Grayson known, period. Rather than, oh, it's just Robin. Kind of one of those things. But... With the Rebirth, we know Dick Grayson, we don't know for sure, but we know there is a Nightwing book that's going to come out.
We don't know.
And the easiest thing to believe is that...
Tom King's going to stay on that.
Yeah, because after Robin War, Dick Grayson made a very important choice that leads him to kind of being blackmailed by another secret society type group. And then that their goal was for him to become Nightwing again. So, there's that. And, you know, I would love to see Tom King on Grayson. I would love to see him on Batman as well. Especially since DC gave him and two others, Clay Dunn and... I can't remember the other guy. Exclusive contracts with DC. So
wasn't it the guy who was on Cyborg?
No, Cyborg's by... Or Cyborg does... That's David Walker and Ivan Reyes. Ivan Reyes is already on DC.
Oh.
But, sorry. But, these great, phenomenal writers and artists have all been doing, like, a giant pitch war trying to get onto certain books. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really interesting to see the state of DC afterwards. And you know what? Since everything is going to be bi-weekly or monthly, all the books have dropped down to $2.99, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like all these books are coming out at the same time. Yeah. It's like, oh, my wallets.
Yeah. Another one that I'm really looking forward to seeing what book they get on is James Tynion, which he's pretty much been the lead writer on. I mean, for Batman and Robin Eternal. Yeah, I mean, it was said that Scott Snyder and James Tynion co-wrote pretty much the whole story. But it seems like Tynion's really been taking the lead on this, and even Scott Snyder's like, yeah, this is mostly his work. Like, I was there to script it out, but he's been the one who's been, like, really driving all of it.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the coolest things I love about that kind of stuff is that they're teaming up, and then you have all these other writers from all the other different series that have been tackling that Batman and Robin Eternal series as well. So you have Tynion, you have Scott Snyder, you have...
Wasn't Seeley on a book at one point?
Tim Seeley was on the original Eternal, I believe. You have the two people that are going to be taking over Grayson for this next story arc. You have Genevieve Valentine, who wrote, like, the pinnacle or one of the best Catwoman stories in the past few years, you know? So all these people are coming together, and it's like, you want all of these writers to stay on in some function or capacity, yeah, because you love their work. You know, I love anything within that realm of the Gotham mythos, so I fall in love with those writers really quickly because they write such great stories. One of those other rumors is having Dan Jurgens, the original murderer of Superman, come back as the Superman writer for DC. Right now, he's killing it on, what was that series? Superman, Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
Where the pre-Flashpoint Superman, after Convergence, comes into the New 52 world. He's been within...
With a kid. Like, it's like a fan fiction story gone right for once.
Yeah, and that's been such a fun series, seeing, you know, a character we already know, very well established, written by the guy who just cares that much about him, even though he killed him decades ago. So, and then there's also the rumor that Peter Tomasi, who is also one of my
He's also rumored to take over Superman as well. Yeah.
Well, he's taking over Superman books for the next 2 months.
Those are probably April and May are probably going to be the weirdest months for DC, just because it's like all these like writers are just taking over for one or two books.
And it just
seems really odd.
It's like a lull, kind of the calm before the storm of rebirth. Because Tomasi is taking over Superman Action Comics, and he's already the writer for Superman.
And Tynion's taking over the last two issues of Batman.
One.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because
only writing issue 52.
That's right, because Snyder's leaving at 51. Just really seems weird. It's like, why can't you just finish it off, man? Yeah. Get your 52 issues in.
But, so with Tomasi, he's doing this Super League concept, which we really don't know that much about, other than the fact we know both of the Supermen, the current Superman of the New 52 origin, and then the pre-Flashpoint Superman are finally going to meet. And the way that it's been described is that it's going to transition into Rebirth. So whatever events or whatever story is happening there will kind of give us way for this new realm of story.
So, just kind of go back on Tynion real quick. One of the things he's been... I follow a lot of my favorite writers on Twitter, and he's been teasing a lot. He's like, he's always said for Rebirth, he's like, I'm going to be working on something big and something I've been wanting to do with a Bat Family character for a while.
Hey, man, he writes Batman Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles all right. He can do whatever he wants in my eyes.
Yeah, and he's also part of that, like, Snyder, like, a group of people who was like taught by Snyder, so it's like I have all faith in whatever book he writes. Personally, I really want him to go back to Red Hood because he had an 8-issue arc on him, and he was just so great, and it was so nice to see her like just Jason as like a human being for once, other than just gun toting. I'm a bounty hunter kind of guy. Like I said, I have a huge beef with Lobdell at this point. Like, I'm just kind of done with him.
Yeah, and
So I'm looking forward to that. So kind of just something that came out, I think, earlier this week, was there's going to be a Lumberjanes and Gotham Academy crossover miniseries, which just seems like the most odd combination ever, but it's like it fits perfectly.
It's not even
I haven't read Lumberjanes, but I love Gotham Academy.
It's not even odd. They're part of that same very niche group where it's just this, like, you know, it's a young person's reading. Lumberjanes.
Just for, like, clarification, if anybody who's not reading Gotham Academy, it's pretty much Hogwarts with Batman. Like, in the Batman Gotham universe. It's pretty much how it goes. It's like a fun detective, like, oh, there's, like, some magic involved, and there's a lot of, like, call-outs to, like, Gotham City, and, like, they had some fun times with, like, Endgame and stuff like that.
And it's
been a really great series.
All of the staff members in Gotham Academy were some of the villains from the Batman 66 TV show, if you've ever noticed, and it is this really fun, kind of quirky concept. When I got to talk to Becky Cloonan,
Who's the original writer on it?
Yeah, she is one of the writers on it.
And she's been taking a break recently.
Yeah, I joked around with her. I'm like, how did you pitch this story? Because it's just such a fantastic thing. And she's like, well, I went up to my editor, Mark Doyle, who I worked with at Vertigo, and I wrote Hogwarts plus Gotham.
Equals money sign.
Yeah, equals money sign. And he accepted it, and, you know, that's her joke pitch, but it's very much that. And then Lumberjanes is published by Boom Comics, and it's about a group of girls at summer camp, scout camp, who they kind of investigate or fall into these mysteries with strange creatures and supernatural phenomena that...
So very much along the same kind of, like,
that's
vein.
Why, you know, I was telling Zach here, I'm like, you think it's odd that this Boom series and Gotham is crossing over, but it fits within that same niche group that I enjoy very much. Like, anything that involves some sort of boarding school mystery kind of thing, I love it. I think it goes back to my Code Lyoko days.
Which is probably why Morning Glories was such a thing for you.
Oh, yeah. Lost meets a boarding school.
God, that book is so bizarre and interesting, and, like, there's so many weird things. It's just like, once you see the flow, it's just like, oh, that setup was perfect.
I just want to see a real timeline.
That would be great. Just because
all the arrows going
just trying
everywhere.
To, like, follow it sometimes can get a little confusing.
This character goes into the past and meets this character. And then they caused
events that happened in this... Yeah, it's just a whole thing. We'll have to talk about that some other time, but it's just a whole thing. So, next thing I want to talk about. So, next week is March... We're recording this on March 12th. So, I guess, really, this upcoming week. We are going to C2E2 in Chicago.
Yes, Chicago Comics and Entertainment
Human
Expo.
Though.
And this is my first out-of-state convention, and this is also the first time I will be on a flight since I was 9 years old.
As a fan
of air disasters, I'm kind of worried about my sanity.
So, I'm going to pull up the list of creators here, or all the comic book guests, and, well, I guess we can just kind of go down, like, who are you most excited for? I know Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are there. Those are probably on the top of your list.
Yeah, I'm gunning for them, definitely. But I think I recall Nick Spencer being there.
Yeah, Nick Spencer is going to be there.
And
so the writer in
Morning
Glories. He's also doing the standoff event, the lead into Civil War II.
And Ant-Man. I don't read Ant-Man, though. Again, I'm just going to say that the Marvel solo characters don't really interest me that much, except for Peter Parker.
Yeah,
it's very much school plus superhero, right. Except for, you know, now Peter Parker's the new Tony Stark.
Probably one of my favorites that I'm looking forward to is Gail Simone. She's probably one of my most read writers out of all the books I've collected. Like, I love her on Queen Room. Queen Room has just been such a
new Vertigo
great and just kind of like it's been disturbing and, like, just really well-paced, and I'm just, like, really fascinated by it, every single issue. Like, I want to know, are these, like, demons? Are these aliens? Like, what is this realm that's going on? Leaving Megalopolis, that's been a phenomenal series. Started as a crowdfunding project.
Dark Horse.
Which is about, like, one day this thing rises out of the ground, and superheroes just... something just goes off in their head where they're just gonna kill everyone.
And it's only superheroes who have powers.
You're right. Right. They're explaining more. I haven't had a chance to read this most recent issue of the second arc, Surviving Megalopolis. But so now they're actually starting to go and like explain. Like the last issue I read, they ended with two characters that are like, we're about to go into the hole and find out what happened.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest questions, like, what the hell happened? What was this thing that was just like, I'm done. I'm just gonna kill all you guys. I'm sick of you.
Yeah, and it's funny because, I also read a lot of the same things Zach does. We have very similar tastes.
Trying to branch out.
Comics and video games and all that jazz. But, Gil tweeted out that Leaving Megalopolis is also in the same universe as Welcome to Tranquility, which was an old Wildstorm property.
Story she wrote.
And it's funny, just this drastic difference between the horror survival aspect of Leaving Megalopolis versus the superhero retirement home that is Welcome to Tranquility.
Yeah.
So just talking about some of the other guests, I'm really pumped to just to be there, because as much fun as our home convention is at Denver Comic Con, C2E2 is regarded as one of the more comic-oriented conventions. Just taking the step away from the entire industry / entertainment aspect of it. So, like, yeah, I'm just really excited just to go there, and, you know, the vendors are going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And meeting all these writers and guests, you know.
One of the funniest things is, so back at last year at DCC, Ramon Perez was there, the artist of the new Hawkeye series that took over with Jeff Lemire. And I saw him, I was just like, huh, that name looks oddly familiar. But I couldn't, for like two days, point it out. And then finally, I was like, oh my god, he's the Hawkeye artist! And he's going to be at C2E2, so I can finally get some of my Hawkeye stuff signed by him. And I'm going to have this funny story to tell him. Like, hey, you're at Denver, and I completely spaced on your name.
We went on this extravagant journey to find some of the back issues for Zach that he was missing of his Hawkeye run. And as we found this stuff, you know, we're like, oh, do you need this issue? Do you need this issue? And then it wasn't until that Sunday that he made that realization.
I made a horrible mistake.
Yeah, we're doing a much better job at keeping track of who's appearing and what comics we can bring.
Yeah. Marguerite Bennett's going to be there again. I'm looking forward to talk to her again. I got a chance to talk to her back at DCC before the Bombshells launch. She's nicest, like, she's like a down-to-earth southern girl. Like, she's like, I think after anything, like any compliment I gave her, she's like, oh, you're too kind. Like, she's the sweetest lady. I'm really looking forward to talk to her again, just because she's so fun to talk to and just follow on Twitter. She's such a troll with, like, their whole group of people. Kieran Gillen and Jamie McElvey, that's going to be fun, especially since Kieran Gillen's a really cool guy, and I've never met Jamie McElvey before, so it'd be
these
nice
guys,
to...
These guys write and draw.
Separately. Yeah, so... They've been a team on, like...
Divine,
Phonogram. Young Avengers, they've done another series together as well.
Yeah, they're awesome people, and you should definitely follow them on Twitter.
Yeah, especially since we can list, like, I can go, like, McElvey, why did you freaking tease that one of the... this character that we killed off 6 months ago, she's the cover art! Yeah. Have fun! We've been waiting for this issue for, like, two months.
Yeah, this is the problem of looking at solicits, you know?
Following any of these people on Twitter. They just like to troll with you.
Yeah, and from my understanding, if you don't read The Wicked and Divine, this arc is definitely the one you can jump on without any prior knowledge of what happened in the previous three volumes, which kind of sounds scary, but,
yeah.
You know, all these story arcs are treated as if you can come for this one thing.
Yeah. And kind of the last one, I guess I'll talk about, like, this list is phenomenal. Like, there's so many good guests coming this event, and it's just going to be great to see as many as we can. But Scotty Young, the guy, the man, the myth, the legend, who probably finally snapped of drawing cutesy art with his fucking I Hate Fairyland. Which, that was just such... You could tell he was having so much fun with that book. Like, but at the same time, you're just like, did he finally lose it? Because I'd be surprised if you're listening to this and you don't know who Scotty Young is at this point. Like, he does all the cutesy, like, kind of chibi...
The child.
Like, all the child
covers for Marvel variants.
And he's done
the Wizard of Oz series for Marvel also. He started off as a Marvel intern with them, and then he's the artist, he does variant artists, and he's also the writer for Rocket Raccoon.
Right. But, yeah, he's just, like, known for drawing all these cutesy characters, and then apparently, like, I Hate Fairyland has been, like, a work in progress for years, and he's finally gotten to do it. It's just this brutal and just, like, cartoony-esque violence. It's just, like...
So...
It's just so brutal and hilarious.
Explain the premise of I Hate Fairyland.
So, the basic plot is this girl, Gertrude, when she's... I think she's almost, like, 7 or something. She's, young. Like, really young. She gets... Like, one day I think she's like, oh, I wish I could go to the, like, land of fairies and, like, forever and, like, have fun. So, just the first scene is, like, horrifying. She is, like, this portal appears out of nowhere and she gets sucked into fairyland. And she, like, lands on impact and, like, breaks all these bones. So you can already tell, like, it's gonna be this gruesome series. Like, bones are poking out of her arm. She's, like, lost a tooth. And the whole point is she has to find this key so she can get out and go home.
Past
27 years, and she hasn't aged a day, so she's still this, like, 7-year-old girl, but with the mind of a, like, 34-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Who's just, like, fed up with everything, and she's still trapped in this cute fairyland.
Yeah, it's just a spin on, like, the ever-so-classic Disney tale of,
yeah,
I am going on this magical adventure... And it's what happens if you don't succeed on your magical adventure. And the Queen of Fairyland just does everything.
Eventually,
in her
power. She's fed up with Gertrude as well, and she starts sending, like, bounty hunters and assassins after her to just finally get rid of her, because she physically, there's, like, some, like, fairy law that states that any guest of Fairyland cannot be harmed,
yeah,
by her,
and they can't, you know, Gertrude. I really want to talk about it more, but the first
it's
arc
just such
just
a,
concluded.
It's just such a fun and, like, if you kind of, like, just... it's also an image book, so it's... Scotty Young's, like, that. It's his own project. It's his pet project.
Yeah, he does both the art and the writing for it, and...
You can just tell he has such a blast with it.
And in his letter in that first issue, Zach, he talked about how all these kids back in his day wanted to write for Marvel, wanted to write for DC... But the first book Scotty Young ever read was from Image. And that was his end game. That I wanted to write and work for Image. But now he's one of the most popular Marvel artists.
Yeah.
But I Hate Fairyland is just this crazy fun ride that everyone should read.
Yeah. Just it's super... one of my favorite things is when you can tell the creators just had a blast writing and creating this... Like, whatever it is. Like, the book, the story, whatever it is, like... You can tell that their heart was in it, and that's probably one of my favorite things that kind of, like, draws me to certain books and just certain projects.
Alright, should we go on to our last little
of
the week?
So, yeah, we're going to do hopefully, if we continue doing this podcast, we're going to have, like, our pick the weeks for our pulls of whatever we grabbed out. So, if you want to start, Zach, go ahead. And...
Oh, don't do that to me. So, it's kind of hard right now to pick one book as my top book this week, because everything is ending. Like, all their story arcs are ending in, like, the next one or two issues. But,
Just a little disclaimer. This is kind of like... This is also kind of like our recommendations of things that we think that you'd like. We'll kind of, like, give you the genre of what the book is, too.
So, it was actually a really light week for me. I am crazy, and I read just literally anything and everything. But, my pick of the week was... Descender, issue 11, this, and it's the last issue of this current arc by, and it's by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen.
Yep.
And for one thing, I love Dustin Nguyen. He did the art on Paul Dini's Batman.
And also Little Gotham.
In Little Gotham, which is one of my favorite things ever. But I'll get into that on another day. So it's by this phenomenal artist, almost everything he draws is overlaid with like this almost very watercolor style art. But Descender, his basic thing is that it's about a young robot who's eternally young, Tim 21, and he... Can we just go into spoilers at this point, I'm guessing?
Yeah, not to go too big into it, but like, if you're going to talk about like the first event that happens, that's just pretty much the main plot.
Yeah, so Tim 21, his whole deal is that he is a caretaking robot who bonded with his partner, Andy.
He actually feels emotions.
He is a very human. And this book is really primarily about being human. And it's this war of ideologies between the humans and the robots who gain sentience once these things called the harvesters have arrived, which the robots kind of revere as their god, where the humans kind of see them as like this destroyer. Well, Tim 21 and all the robot AI is based on the harvesters. So
What I like about it is like it's kind of like that whole like, oh, humans, we can't trust robots because they're gonna wipe us all out and they shouldn't be allowed to feel. But it's just such an interesting perspective because it's this child robot who just wants to like find his childhood friend.
Yeah, and it's just this again. It's this adorable idea, or not even adorable. It's this idea of what it is being human because this robot feels more emotion
than most of the human characters.
Yeah, and, you know, he's traveling with the commander of the UGC. I forgot what the acronym is, but it's like this military force. And then Dr. Kwan, who
is the quote-unquote creator.
Yeah, he's the creator, and he stole the AI-based programming that created Tim 21 and all these other robots to gain their artificial intelligence. But, the last issue was just a wild ride because Tim...
Try not to go too bad.
Yeah.
Deep into like
Tim and his people meets the robot... You know,
revolution.
Not even revolution, but like this robotic utopia. And the doctor wants to know everything that Tim knows and see all the things that he sees. And he meets another Tim model, Tim 22. And, you know, it's just seeing the drastic difference between Tim 21, who was raised alongside another child, learning how to be human, and then Tim 22, who's drank the Kool-Aid for this robotic revolution. And how about you?
Oh, man, that's a... Like I said, I wish I had gotten to... I tried to catch up on all my books for this week. Didn't get a chance to read Surviving Megalopolis, which I'm surprised not more people are reading it. Like, I go to a brand new shop called Halls of Justice in Parker, Colorado. Highly recommend it. Shout out to you, John. But I didn't get the issue until Friday, so yesterday for me. And I tried to get through it, all my stuff that I was missing. I just couldn't get to that one, so I imagine that would have been up there. I want to contrast differently from you, because I also really loved Descender this week. Man. Gotta think about
Can
it.
Can I change my answer so we have something relevant to talk about?
Give me 1 second. I have all my tools right here.
Zach just walked away to his couch where all his comics are sitting on.
Honestly, I think my favorite one I read this week was probably Batman and Robin Eternal.
Written by Genevieve Valentine this week.
Yeah, it's a weekly series. The storyline's almost over. There's only 3 issues left at this point. The whole series is just, it's, what I like about it is, like, I like that they're doing only 26 issues for this, just because the whole 52 thing for Batman Eternal back last year, which was really cool, like, I like that it was, like, year-long series, but it just seems, like, so drawn out, like, it was just, like, oh, every single week was, like, oh, there's a new baddie, like, who is the actual, like, villain behind everything. I like that they finally, like, for this series, they cleared up everything. It's like, oh, by the way, I was like, oh, here's the main villain. Here's Mother. Like, she has her own plot, her own plan. She's going to do this. So, like,
she
okay,
is
great.
Essentially what Batman would have been if Batman decided to kill people.
Yeah, pretty much. And this week they brought in what I love about the series is they brought back so many characters that have just been vacant from the DC universe for a while. Like, they brought back Sandra Cain in the the first issue? It was like one of the first three issues of it. They brought back Cassandra Cain. I loved Cassandra Cain and like the little bit of I read of her back before New 52 and stuff. Like, I've been trying to go back into like back
she
issue
was
stuff.
Batgirl for people who don't
Before Stephanie?
She's the second Batgirl, or technically the third if you want to count Helena Bernatelli, yeah. But she was the big Batgirl before Stephanie Brand, and then she became Black Bat when she returned prior to Flashpoint.
Yeah, and they've kind of... It seems like they created her a new origin story for her. Like, she's a lot younger. She's, like, maybe 19 in this story. It's kind of hard to tell. She's really young.
Well, she's always been Tim's age.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, and all the other stuff I read, it's like, she seems a lot older. Maybe it's just because she seems more mature.
Well, everyone did de-age with the New 52.
That is true. I like the setup of this issue because it's, like... This is the big battle's about, like, the big confrontation's finally about to come through, and the series is about done. We finally get to see whatever resolution is about to come. And also, Midnighter is in this issue, and him and Dick's relationship is probably the most entertaining thing I've read between two DC characters. For anyone who doesn't know, Midnighter is hella gay, and he pretty much acts with Tim like as if they were a married couple. Or Dick. Time. Wow, I messed that up. Another thing I like is just all the characters, like I said, all the characters that they bring back to this series. Like, they brought back Batwoman in this last issue. Like she doesn't say much, she has like one or two lines, but Batwoman's been gone ever since her solo title ended, like, almost a year ago. So it's like, that's great to see, and it's just really cool. It seems like at least I really hope that a lot of these characters just stay around once Rebirth hits.
Yeah, and for those of you that don't know, clearly by the title Batman and Robin Eternal, it's all about the Robins. That to the point that when Scott Snyder and James Tynion announced this at one of the big conventions, everyone on the writing team got Robin, like, Letterman jackets. And this really is Scott Snyder and Tynion's kind of pet project. You know, Scott Snyder wrote maybe like the first three issues, but it has that rotating artist and writer thing.
Yeah.
So this week was by Genevieve Valentine, who wrote the Catwoman series that I talked about earlier.
And I feel like this one, like, aside from, like, to contrast Batman Eternal, it just seems a lot better paced. Like, there's no real lull in it. Like, something's always, like, I think that's probably just helps because there's a clear villain. Like, Batman Eternal is like, you didn't learn who the actual villain was until, like, the last three issues of it.
Yeah.
Like, now it's like, we've had a lot of build-up in this series, and it's, like, about to finally, like, come to a close. So it was just a really, really solid issue.
It's a very fun way of celebrating these anniversaries. So when Batman Eternal was on, it was Batman's 75th year anniversary. When Batman and Robin Eternal started, it was Dick Grayson, the first Robin's 75th anniversary. So seeing this kind of progression, this celebration of these characters has been really fun for the Gotham fans, more or less.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are... If you're not reading those two series, like I said, Batman and Robin Turtle is about to end. So if you want to get into it and you haven't been reading it, I highly recommend you just wait for those trades to come out. I think the first one's probably out at this point. So the second one should probably come out around... probably June or so.
And Descender just finished their first arc, or their
second
arc.
So.
And that second volume / trade will be out next month, and then Descender comes back in
monthly June.
Publishing in June. So you can hop on that.
You got a good break between the two stories to catch up. But yeah, I think it was a pretty good first episode there.
It was
fun.
Testing different things. So.
Yeah, hope you any feedback would be nice. If you want to maybe try and get up a Twitter line or something, if we want to have people ask questions or give their opinions or so.
Yeah,
but we'll see how this goes. It's fun.
Bye.
Bye, boy boys.